As the activity of spirit increases in us, we find a continuity of release. It is described in the Revelation here now by the seven trumpets sounding, and each time another depth of spiritual activity is released in you, there is a proportionate ending of a material sense of self. And so the rising from the tomb continues as spirit increases its activity, and by degrees we are losing our desire for the fruits of the flesh. It begins with spirit touching us in such a way that our own self-will, to an extent, begins to totter and to be controlled. And then as our self-will is controlled, the works that we do with our self-will begin to lose favor with us. We even turn upon our own works and realize that they're not what we wanted in the first place. Still, we continue building our own towers of Babel, believing that fulfillment lies in the flesh, in the material things of the world, in better human conditions. And as we continue in that belief, we find a renewed effort of spirit in us throws confusion into us. We thought we were going to have better conditions, but instead, the release of spirit once more entangles us in such a way that we begin to look at our own self-will with a closer scrutiny. What is the cause of my problems? Why do they persist? And ultimately we discover the bitterness that comes with thinking we were doing the right thing only to find that it wasn't as right as we thought. We become suspicious of ourselves. We have not found the way. And there is a moment when we realize there is something going on in us that has not been explained to us. Something deadly. Some poison that must be routed out if we are to be free. And we begin to notice that there is a force at work in us called the mortal mind. It is only when our own works, our own will, our own ambitions, even when fulfilled, lead to ultimate disaster, that we begin to suspect this mortal mind is a little more powerful than just a force trying to persuade us against our will to do evil, or to seek those things that could be construed as evil. And now we come to that great revelation that the will that we thought was our will was not our will at all. The ambition we thought was our ambition belonged to this mortal mind that had taken possession, usurping the throne of our being and calling itself our mind. We discover the cosmic illusion that has enforced its will, its activity, its works, even its imaged body where we stand. And the triumph of Christ Jesus becomes even greater in our eyes as we see that he had overcome the mortal mind of the world. It is this in himself that he overcame. It is this in us that we are to overcome. We begin to see the works we had done to be self-devouring locusts that eat up the fruits of everything we have done, which we considered so pure and so noble. And we look at those who have gone before us, not in the spirit, but in the flesh, and we say, where are the great works they did? What has happened to them? And we see they too lived in the years of the locusts, all of their works devoured by some unseen force. And then the tyranny of mortal mind becomes clear. Mortality is nothing more than mortal mind expressing. Mortal bodies are nothing more than mortal mind images. We see the world as the imitation of our reality. And now the sixth trumpet brings to us the renewed effort of spirit as we are awakened to this mortal mind. And we see the horsemen and the breastplates of fire. And we see the jacinth and we see the brimstone. All of this is the activity of spirit within us, liberating us. Truth, love, justice, riding as if on a horse. And so at the end of the sixth trumpet, this is the condition we face. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, them that sat on them having breastplates of fire, and of jacinth and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions. Now the authority of Christ is released in us, the heads of lions. And out of their mouths is issued fire and smoke and brimstone. Now Old Testament theology has this as God's vengeance. Spiritual awareness realizes that the brimstone and the fire and the smoke are the will, the work, and the results of divine activity in our being. The will of God released in us as our own self-will dwindles as we turn against it, inviting the will of the Father, seeking the one source. And that will releases divine works, which is the smoke. And those works release divine results, which is the brimstone. And by these three was the third part of men killed. The third part of mortal consciousness killed. By the fire and by the smoke and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. And so these horsemen, these inner impulses of the spirit, of love, truth, and justice, of the will of the Father in you, releases the works of the Father in you, and a third part of your material consciousness is killed. Now you've noticed as you've gone through the trumpets that always a third part was killed. And you must know by now that the reason a third part is killed is to tell you that there is a permanent life in you that is never touched. Never is the life of the Father in you touched. All that is destroyed is that which is unlike the Father, that which is not your permanent self. And yet in spite of this, these new higher impulses, we still have those who will cling to the idols. For their power, these inner impulses in their mouth and in their tails, for their tails are like unto serpents, and the heads, and they had heads, and with them they do hurt. Now the sting of spirit in you is like a serpent's head and a serpent's tail to the self-will. And all that is being stung is that self-will in us which is still a remnant of the mortal consciousness which is dying. The rest of the men which were not killed, and these men are not physical men. These are the mortal impulses with which we do honor and glory not to the things of God, but to our own mortal concepts, which are the false graven images. And the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues yet repented not of the works of the hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk. Neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornications, nor of their thefts, remaining in us yet is the capacity to recognize iniquity, to be unforgiving, to live in a material sense of life. But now, this level of consciousness being reached, which comes at different times to different individuals, the ability to see that your own works in your own will are not your works, are not your will, but are the works of mortal mind, a universal force that functions only in those who are unaware of its presence. This awareness opens you for the seventh trumpet. And now there is an angel appearing. And this angel appears to John and must appear before he can hear the seventh trumpet sound. Now I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. If you have made the proper preparation in your way of life, you have reached that point which John speaks of. Now, it has also occurred in Genesis, and I think we should refer to it. This was what Noah too came upon. In the 9th chapter of Genesis, we find this in the 12th verse up to the 17th. And God said, "This is the token of the covenant which I make between me and you, and every living creature that is with you, for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you, and every living creature of all flesh, and the waters shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh, and the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth." And God said unto Noah, "This then is the token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth." Now there is a level of consciousness then in which you become aware of the consciousness of God in you, a consciousness in which the source and you are one. The separation, the division in consciousness is removed. There is a re-establishment of oneness with the divine. And this is called the covenant. And so this mighty angel now that comes down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, is for John the fulfillment of that divine promise, which is the fulfillment each of us can expect when we have reached the level of the absence of self-will, which John had attained. And the angel is clothed with a cloud and a rainbow upon his head, his face as it were the sun, his feet pillars of fire. All of the symbols now that this is the angel of illumination coming to John. An illumination which is going to be the realization of immortality, the realization of a body that is eternal, the realization of infinity expressing where he stands. And the angel had in his hand a little book open. Open. Before, who is worthy to open the book? But now, the book is open. The book of life, of truth, is open to John. He has risen above self-will. He has risen above the activity of mortal mind in himself. He has recognized the seat of Satan. He has been able to face that will of the world mind with an infinite silence. He has been able to meet the will of world thought without resistance or reaction. He has been able to look at the images of world thought and not be persuaded that God had wrought an imperfect universe. And so for him now, the book is open. And this angel had set his right foot upon the sea and his left foot upon the earth, meaning that now both the earth and the sea would come under the law of divine government for John. Dominion was taking place. And the angel cried with a loud voice, as when a lion roareth. And when he had cried, seven thunders uttered their voice. Now the will of Christ is being expressed, the lion roareth, and the seven thunders are the government of heaven on earth, the seven heavens realized. All this is about to take place, and when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write, says John, and I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered. Write them not. And so at this point, John could not say, now here is what the seven thunders said. There was something in him that was still unfulfilled, as it will be in us, even though the great prize is so close. And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven and swore by him that liveth forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that therein are, and the earth, and the things that therein are, and the sea and the things which are therein, that there should be time no longer. The time had come now for John to step out of time. No longer could a remnant of self-will remain in him. He had to move into the eternal now. His time sequence had arrived at the level where fulfillment begins. The time for man to live in his own self-will was over for John, as it will be for each of us. We are given a certain amount of time in which to live in self-will, during which time we come into the realization that only the will of the Father in us can be our will. And then, if we have not reached that within the time, we are a branch, purged, cut off. But John had reached it within the time, and now there would be no more time for John. He would be lifted into the eternal, where the works of man are no longer transient, temporary, dictated by his concept of what he should do, but where he performs only works that are eternal, works that never are destroyed. But now a strange thing happens. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when it shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared in his servants the prophets. The mystery cannot be revealed until the seventh trumpet has sounded in you, the full and total mystery. For there is still a condition that must be removed. And the voice which I heard from heaven spake unto me again and said, Go and take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel which standeth upon the sea and upon the earth. Now John must face a truth that you must face, that I must face, that each individual comes to in time to face. And this truth is what John is being told to face when he is told to go up and take the book out of the hand of the angel. He must look at reality. He can avoid it no longer. And I went unto the angel and said unto him, Give me the book. And he said unto me, Take it and eat it up. And it shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be in thy mouth sweet as honey. Now there is a truth that we would all face then, which is going to be as sweet as honey. That's the truth that God has created a perfect universe. God is all. John goes up and faces that truth. God is all. What a beautiful truth. But why should it be bitter in his belly if it's so sweet as honey in his mouth? That's what we are about to discover when we accept the allness of God as the fact of the Book of Life. For the bitterness is in the digestion of that truth, in the application of it. The Spirit says to John, I want you to prove that truth before you go another step. I want you to live that truth, demonstrate it. The seventh trumpet will never sound until God is all is your way of life. The kingdom of heaven on earth will never appear in your consciousness until God is all is your living consciousness. The kingdom of heaven on earth will never appear in the world for you until it appears in your consciousness within. As within, so without. And so, the priceless pearl is there, sweet as honey. But are you ready to prove it? This is where John is stopped. We might eavesdrop on that conversation between Christ Jesus and Christ John. It surely was more than a word in a book. It may have been 10 or 15 or 20 years out of his life. John was learning something for which the Spirit has said, tell no man. And John didn't tell it there, did he? He couldn't tell it there. He had to first live through it. You might hear the voice of Christ Jesus say, John, you're the only man on earth that I'm talking to now because what I did, you must do. I was crucified visibly. Your crucifixion will be invisible. I walked out of the world in a body and walked back. You will simply walk out of it in a body without walking back. You've been trained to continue the work of Spirit on earth. Your function is to demonstrate God's perfect universe wherever you are. You too are a way shower, John. You must demonstrate the perfect divine universe on earth as I did. And there is still something in your way. Do you remember at the wedding in Cana? When I said to my mother, woman, what have I to do with thee? Do you remember the word I used, John, for woman? And then John would have said, yes, I do remember the word. Use the word that is spelt J-U-V-A-I. It means something different than just woman. And then the Christ would say to John, what did that word uvi mean when I said woman? And John would say, well, it was a word you would use to a stranger, an impersonal word. It was a word with deep concern, but it's also the same word that you use for the woman of Samaria at the well. And therefore would say to Christ, what did I mean when I used such an impersonal word to what the world called my mother? And John would think and say, well, I see now what you mean. It meant that material woman has no authority over the Spirit. And what else, John? Well, it also meant that material woman could not give birth to the Spirit. Ah, now we're getting there, John. Woman, what have I to do with thee? What have I, Christ's Spirit, to do with a material woman? So, John, you too must do the same. You too must face the source of your birth very closely and say, woman, what have I to do with thee? I, Christ in you, say to your physical mother, what have I to do with thee? Have you done that yet, John? Have you surrendered the notion that spirit was born out of matter? Yes, it's sort of bitter in the belly. God is all as honeycomb in the mouth, but was God born in your mother's womb? And now John is resting in the Word. He has to face this truth because the seven trumpet will never sound. Illumination can never come to a mortal being, to a mortal consciousness, to one who lives in a physical form. The world without will always be the world within. And if you want the world without to be the kingdom, you must live in the kingdom within. So now John, like Jacob, is wrestling with that which he must face. And we who are walking the path are being told by John that just as this is what I had to face, so must you. God says to you, I am not a human being, but I am all. What are you? God says to you, I don't have a heart that is beating. I am not breathing. I am not going and coming. I am not living in time or in space. I am not sick. I know nothing of disease. What about you? Is God all, or is there still a you with a heart, with a body, living in time, living in space, having human relationships? Is there still such a you? Then to you, God is not all. You'll stay with the honey in the mouth. But is there one there, and another there, who is ready to digest the honey, even though it be bitter? Is there one who can go back into self and move through the painless crucifixion of that which is not God? Is there one who can die to false belief, who is ready to say to the material self, there is no you, for God is all? To the human will, there is no you, for God is all. To human ambition, there is no you, for God is all. To human works, there can be no human works, for God is all. And the human sense cries out, this is too bitter. And that is why the preparation must be slow. Why every foundation stone must be established so that when you reach the point of demonstrating the allness of God, of proving it by living in a total release of self, you are prepared, ready, willing, eager, able to step aside. And then you find It is not bitter at all. What is that seventh bit of knowledge that must be given before the angel of illumination, the action of God's will in you, is really released? What does the death of self really mean? And John is still wrestling when the voice may have said, "Many's the time, John, in your sleep, you dreamed that you and your disciples were rowing across the sea and the ship overturned and they all drowned. Isn't that true, John?" "Why, yes, how did you know?" "And isn't it true that when you awakened, John, you were relieved to find that the ship had not overturned at all? It was all a dream." "Yes, I was. I was greatly relieved." "John, you must now awaken from the mortal dream and discover that every evil in it is part of the dream and every good in it is part of the dream. Your human life, John, was never lived. If you're prepared, it is not bitter. If you're not prepared, it hurts. And you turn away and you go from the spirit back into mortality, afraid. But if it is your time to face truth, then you are standing with John, ready to know that everyone you have ever loved, you have never loved. And whoever has loved you has never loved you. Everyone you have ever hated or feared, you have never hated or feared. Everything you have done as a human being, you have not done. It's very bitter in the belly. And few there be who want it. Few there be who can face it. And some there be who say, "How glorious. There is no pollution in the world, no killing, no cancer, no disease, no death, no, and no birth. God was never born, but God is all. Then when were you born? You were born in a mortal dream, weren't you? And in a moment, suddenly it is revealed as a dream. And the angel appears, clothed in a cloud, wearing a rainbow, with feet of fire. And the truth comes upon you that time never was, space never was, form never was as we have known it. It was a mortal mind dream, a universal dream. We were not even the dreamer. We're the characters in the dream. We are the images of the mortal mind dreamer. Words to many, a realization to some. It takes a long digesting before it becomes honey again in your mouth. This is the Adam dream, then. And the rebirth is the awakening from the sleep of that dream. The awakening to the realization that the me who walks the earth in a form is a misperception of the mortal mind. Whatever it does whatever it says, whatever it thinks, all the great good it has seemingly done, is neither good nor bad. Just part of the dream. And only when the dream is understood as a dream, do you begin to sense the new substance behind the dream. Only in the recognition of the dream do you awake from it. And lo and behold, in the awakening from the dream, you're ready for the seventh trumpet. Because now you are ready to prove God is all. There is no mortal. Neither where you stand nor where your neighbor stands. For you, you are in the birth of the new consciousness. The consciousness which is ready to serve Him supremely, to acknowledge Him in all your ways. To be an expression of His will, doing His works. And this is what John goes through at this point. And I took the little book out of the angel's hand, and I ate it up, and it was in my mouth sweet as honey. And as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. Our new identity, when God is all, is accepted, is the undivided self, which does not say, I am material being and also the child of God. Henceforth, at this level of acceptance, you walk forward as the living spirit of God. This is the path that John is presenting to us at this point. That when your identity is accepted as child of God, spirit of God, it cannot be lip service alone. Now, there are many of us who are not prepared to do this. And it would be foolhardy to try to do it if you're not prepared to do it. Those of us who have come into this work late, who are not ready, we're not supposed to jump into the ocean and start swimming because the book says so. You have to go back and make your preparation. You have to take every step necessary. You have to learn to swim if you're going to jump into the spiritual ocean. So we're not saying that whoever hears these words has to suddenly walk out as a spirit and decide that they are not mortal material flesh. It might take some people another 10 or 20 years to do that, and others 10 or 20 centuries. But always there have been those few who are ready to do it. Who have been held back by an unawareness of the truth, and surely Christ Jesus was one who walked in the truth for those who could follow as his disciples. Surely John is now being taught that truth so that those who followed him could follow in the truth. And surely we who have come this far in the revelation must have felt that we were ready for the truth wherever it might lead us. And here's where the shoe hurts. Here's where that broad way in which we could keep saying, yes, that's true, ends. And the narrow way starts in which we say, now I must do likewise. This is the narrow way that leads to where John is going, into life eternal. Now this is his first resurrection about to take place. But you see, it's really the same as the second coming of the Christ. The second coming of Christ in John and the first resurrection are really the same. And so it will be when Christ in you is risen. That will be your first resurrection. And it will be the second coming of the Christ in that. Christ has ever been your substance, your mind, and then now the second coming is the realization that Christ is your substance and your mind. Living in your identity as Christ, mind and substance is the only way in which we can uphold the allness of God. As a mortal being, you cannot do it. As a mortal being, your very existence is the lie about the allness of God. Now then, are we willing to take the book that is open before us? Are we ready? John was ready. He took the book. Even though it was bitter in his belly. And so let's say we take the book. How are we going to move and have our being in him if we are ready to accept the allness of God as the nothingness of me? For there cannot be an all God and a me besides. Let's take that step in his allness and begin with I, Christ. I, the Christ mind and the Christ body, was never born, will never die. If you're uncomfortable in that identity, dwell with it a while, a week or two, until any other identity seems uncomfortable. And you'll discover that I, Christ, the light of God, truth of God, the life of God, becomes the new garment that you're willing to wear. And to that you must add one word before you will find the real peace. I, Christ, infinite. Not I, Christ, here in one chair. Not I, Christ, sitting in the living room. Not I, Christ, in the office. Not I, Christ, in the kitchen. But I, Christ, infinite. For God is all. Now that's the theme you must develop within yourself. I, Christ, infinite. That's taking the book out of the angel's hand. And that's digesting it. And it will become living it. proving it, demonstrating it. Christ in you and Christ in your neighbor are one and the same. Christ in you and Christ in every individual on the earth are one. There is no division between Christ infinite and Christ in you. And therefore you cannot accept a personal Christ. There is only I, Christ, infinite. As long as you were born in the womb, there is no infinite you, that's quite clear. And so it was necessary for Jesus to establish that I, Christ, being the infinite Christ, was never born of woman. Your only father, mother, is God. God is the father and the mother of every individual on the earth. God was the father, mother of your parents and of their parents. And the only thing that we as humans have given to our children is a false consciousness. We have permitted them to enter the false dream. And we have given them a sense of that false dream. And they have carried it on and will give it to their children. Until one of us in our household opens that book and can live out, I, Christ, infinite, am the one with the Father who is the majority. I, Christ, is your name, and you have no beginning in time, no ending in time. You cannot go in space because there is no space. You cannot move in time because there is no time. I, Christ infinite, am already everywhere. I, Christ infinite, is the only inhabitant of the earth. I, Christ infinite, have no boundaries and no limitations. I, Christ infinite, am the only self. And beside me there is no other. This is the death of the mortal selfhood in the acceptance of the infinite Christ self as your only self. And again, it is not attained by lip service. It is a fact already pre-established before the appearance of this mortal form. It is a fact waiting to be accepted, lived with, believed. For if you believe on Christ Infinite as your name, the works that Christ Infinite did through Jesus, Christ Infinite will do through you. And greater works. All this is still a preparation. For there will be a time, even after your acceptance of Christ Infinite as your name, that Christ Infinite will grow in your consciousness and it will be met by the world mind. They will meet in what is called the Battle of Armageddon. Your knowledge that Christ Infinite is your name and the world mind will move toward each other. And the truth in you, lived in, will banish the lie. All remnant of mortal self ultimately will die to the degree that you make this your living way. This is your preparation for the day when mortal mind in you refusing to yield is met by Christ infinite in you refusing to yield, as it was in John. After you have dwelt with this for a short time, a great peace descends. For in your fidelity to I, Christ Infinite, as your identity, there is no other identity for you on the face of the earth for any other person. You have accepted it as the only identity on the earth, and it is you. You live in that consciousness of the one self. All that comes into your awareness is translated into that identity. There can be no other identity, for God is all. I, Christ, infinite, is the only Son, the only image and likeness of the Father, the only self. There is no other. And therefore, all others that appear are only an appearance. They have no identity, for the identity behind them is I, Christ, infinite. I, Christ, infinite, is never separated from itself. It never becomes a mortal being or a material being. It never becomes an evil or an imperfection. It never becomes a disease or a hurricane. And it is all. Therefore, where are these things? They are in the mortal consciousness that you are learning to leave behind. That which begins bitter in the belly turns out to be honeycomb there too. We are translating the universe into I, Christ, the infinite self. Where do you live? In a building? There is no building there. Only I, Christ, am there. God is all. Where is the Pacific Ocean? Nowhere. Only I, Christ, am there. God is all. Where is the Atlantic? It isn't there. Where is the Earth? It isn't here. What is here? I, Christ, the infinite self. You have translated the visible material world into one infinite spirit. That's all it ever was, and that's all it ever is going to be. And in this infinite spirit, which is I, Christ, the images lose their power, for he who dwells in I, Christ, infinite. It was necessary to come out of the belief in human birth to come into the understanding of I, Christ, infinite.